This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking by phone with Captain Thomas Dyer, who is the very first Buddhist chaplain in the Army. We're talking by phone to, is it Memphis, Tennessee, Captain Dyer?
Yes, that's correct.
And you can hear me all right.
Yes.
Good, good. Well, I appreciate very much your talking with us, and we're recording this on September 18. I'm not sure right now exactly what date this will air, but it's tomorrow that you begin your service in the Army as a Buddhist chaplain. Is that correct?
Well, technically, I started May 14, 2008, as functioning as a chaplain. But actually, tomorrow, that is September 19, we start our kind of deployment phase or pre-deployment activity. So we can kind of talk as though it's kind of my beginning of kind of the full-time active duty type of service.
So pre-deployment is you're going to be deployed where?
Well, that's unsure. Of course, the National Guard and all that is still those types of information is unsure at this point. But we think that it will, of course, either be Iraq or Afghanistan, but we really don't know at this point.
Let's find out a little bit about your background. You're a Buddhist chaplain in the Army now. What's your background in Buddhism? How were you introduced to it? Did you grow up Buddhist?
No, I actually did not. I grew up in kind of just a general, you know, just a general awareness of Christianity. I was not really forced to go to church or asked to go to church as a child. So it was really just kind of a general sense of a maybe Christian worldview that I was familiar with, but nothing formal like that.
And how did you first learn about Buddhism?
Well, I began to study Buddhism by way of meditation. So I began to read about Zen meditation, and it spoke very deeply to me.
What did you first read?
I'm sorry?
What did you first read?
Well, I began to read Thomas Merton, who is a Christian mystic, and his writings were very powerful in my life. So from there, Thomas Merton had a wonderful friend by the name of Thich Nhat Hanh, and Thich Nhat Hanh being a Zen master, he presented Zen very clearly to the Western mind. And when I began to interact with Thich Nhat Hanh, it just really seemed like a real homecoming to me.
So you were introduced to Buddhist meditation through a Catholic mystic, Thomas Merton. That's quite a story. Now, when you first began learning about meditation, what was it about it that appealed to you?
Well, what I liked about meditation is there was this kind of posture you would take that would be no words, no activity, such as, say, in the Christian tradition, there would be no asking God for anything. There would be no listening to like a voice to kind of get some type of direction from God. It would really just be sitting and just kind of absorbing the presence of God. And I really enjoyed this very much. And it began to kind of sink deeply into me. So from there, just practicing this form of Christian meditation, I began to gain insights, probably into a little deeper understanding of meditation. And then when I interacted with Zen, it really began to speak.
Now, as a chaplain in the army, you are ministering to people in need from many different religious traditions. Do you know at this point how many Buddhists there are in the U.S. Army?
Well, there are some statistics that say there are about 3,300 that actually proclaim and say they are Buddhist. But we do think that there are probably many more. We think that there are those who have probably non-religious preference on their dog tags, and they are either practicing privately or that type of thing. So we suspect that there are many more Buddhists, and they're looking for an opportunity to kind of express themselves in the military.
Let me remind listeners, this is a pre-recorded program for Keeping the Faith, so unlike our usual Sunday nights, you may not call in and ask questions or comments. I'll do my best as host to anticipate some of perhaps your questions. And one might be, as we're talking with Captain Thomas Dyer, the first Buddhist chaplain in the Army, are you the only one currently?
Actually, I'm the only Buddhist chaplain in the Army at the present. There is one other Buddhist chaplain in the Navy, and her name is Chaplain Shin, and she was commissioned and accessioned as a chaplain in 2004. So she does have the great honor of being the first Buddhist chaplain in the United States military-wide.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, we in the Buddhist community are very proud of that. And, of course, I am the first in the Army, and at the present, I am the only one in the Army.
Now, the 3,300 known Buddhist service people in the Army are obviously scattered all around.
That's true.
What kind of means are there for you as a Buddhist chaplain to communicate with them?
Mm. Well, this will present somewhat of an obstacle or challenge that the Army and the Chaplain Corps, of course, will be working on and addressing. But we really believe that the Army reflects current trends in American society. And this has kind of proved itself over the years. So what we're seeing is that there is a rise of what you might call mystical faith practices, which, of course, would include Buddhist practices. So the Army is aware that this type of religious practice is going to be filtering into the Army. So we suspect that there's going to be a large interest in Buddhism wherever I go. So we think that we can be a great benefit wherever we are.
I was reading that the diversity within the Army right now has changed dramatically from years before in terms of religious diversity. And I've, of course, what's in the Army, as you say, reflects what's in society as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And right now there's, a huge shortage of Catholic priests. So in the Army there's about 20% of the service people are Catholic, but only 7% of the chaplains are priests. So someone like you may well be helping a Catholic service person for whom there's no nearby priest. How do you, as a Buddhist practitioner, anticipate how you can be helpful?
Yes. Well, I think I would say, first of all, that we as chaplains, we help the soldier first as a chaplain. So we're going to be dealing with such things as post-traumatic stress, such things as battle fatigue, family counseling, suicide prevention, and things like this. So all the chaplains will join together with this great vigor and, say, teamwork or collegiality. We're going to work together to take care of the needs of the soldier on an emotional level and a mental level. And we do that by being a spiritual friend or being someone that they can talk to. But along with that, we will go on, we will move on into the area of trying to facilitate these servicemen or army or soldiers' religious needs. And that's where we will have to work very diligently to try to find a Catholic service or a Catholic priest to come and minister to the soldier.
So the military service chaplains are available to all the service people and provide these sort of pastoral services, counseling, and those sorts of things, regardless of a person's religious affiliation.
Yes, this is correct. And, of course, on this level of counseling, you really do not have to interject too much of your own specific religious preference or faith. You're just there to be a help, to kind of help the soldier get over an emotional block or maybe a specific traumatic event or something like this. So we all the chaplains will do this, and we will work together to help each other accomplish this task.
One of the controversial issues, of course, for all chaplains has been, are chaplains there to help the soldiers become better killers, to put it in its baldest form? How do you, as a Buddhist, respond to those kinds of questions?
Yes. Well, we certainly do not want to, you know, to participate in that way where we're just thinking of ourselves as killers. And we do not think that this is the proper way to think of the military. See, the military's function is not just to kill. And I've had this type of discussion that's come to me that said, how can you be a chaplain and a Buddhist at the same time and function in the army? How can you kind of promote Buddhism into the army when the sole purpose of the army and the military is to kill, or the sole purpose of the military is to engage the enemy? So from that point, I began to think, well, why are we thinking of the military as this way, as its purpose to kill? Because we think the military's purpose is to protect. And we would not want to think of the United States as not having a military. If we did not have a military, we can think very clearly that things would not go well for us. So we think of a serviceman or a soldier primarily as a protector.
When you've had these kind of discussions with other Buddhists, other Buddhist leaders, have they expressed surprise that you would be willing to go into the army and be part of the military service, or did they understand this notion of seeing the military as protecting our country?
This is a very good question here, and so far there is a kind of an in-house debate that is kind of spinning up or arising, and the Buddhist community in America is beginning to discuss this issue among itself and to think about it very deeply. So just to say these general statements about the military is there to train to kill is not thinking about the military very deeply. And yeah, there is that kind of discussion.
When you first entered the military as a chaplain, I guess you were in training back in 2008 when you first joined, is that right?
Actually, that is correct.
Now, you already had a master's degree. I know the military requires at least a master's from all of its clergy who are chaplains.
Yes.
So you'd already had that kind of educational background. What kind of training did you get in the Army to be a chaplain?
Well, we have what's called Shibboleth, which is a basic officer's leadership course. And, of course, it would be for the chaplain. So it's a three-month course that will include, like, the beginning of the course will be, like, similar to a boot camp, kind of an initiation into the military, where you learn rank and form and structure, and then you go to the field and experience all of the experiences that a combat soldier would experience. And then later into the course, it becomes more, say, a gentleman's course, and you begin to study counseling techniques and philosophy and ethics and things like this.
Now, one of the things that a chaplain is taught is that you are not to try to convert service people from their own faith to yours, but you are free for people who ask questions, or you're free to talk with them and share your Buddhist beliefs and practices. How do you make that distinction? How do you know when it's appropriate and when it's not?
Well, it's clear that from the chaplain corps' point of view, there's a doctrine that you are not to proselytize or evangelize the soldier. In fact, this is not a good method, because a soldier, when they enter into military service and potentially into combat, what they need is their root faith. They need to connect deeply with the one they believe in and the tradition that they believe in. So if a chaplain takes the posture or sees it as their mission to convert, then they can potentially be causing confusion and even harming the soldier whom they have come into the military to help, to nurture, to care for, and to soothe and calm down. So that is definitely not a good thing to do. So it's really not a problem for me to make this distinction of when I should present Buddhism to a soldier or when I should not, because it's very clear when someone comes to you if they want what you have to offer by way of your faith distinctive. If they don't, then, of course, we just talk about how to deepen their own faith. And for me, as a Buddhist, I believe, of course, that I have some training that I can offer by way of calming and meditation and things of that nature. So I can offer those techniques without violating or contradicting the soldier's personal faith.
And, of course, many faiths believe that one's personal life and example is the best way to communicate to someone else what is helpful in the particular faith tradition they're in. I notice I'm talking more slowly, interviewing you than I might an evangelical Christian, for example. So the effect of the calmness, the meditation of Buddhism affects you, and perhaps it's even affecting me long distance over a telephone in an interview.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Meditation does have a very wonderful and even strange power to do that, to calm and to make the mind more lucid. And we think that this is very important in the military. The military has this kind of speed up, ramp up effect, and it's different when you actually just drive onto a military base. You can just feel the energy rise, and of course, when you get into what what the Army calls theater, or you get into the combat zone. There's a lot of tension that is just buzzing in the background all the time. And a soldier will have to live in this environment for up to 15 months or however long the deployment is. So the mind can begin to speed up, and the muscles can be tense all the time. Sleep, when a soldier is sleeping, they could be dreaming and acting in a military kind of way with that military energy. So when a soldier comes back to his civilian life, the energy drops down drastically. And the soldier has a difficult time bringing that mind speed down to fit his family life and his social life in the civilian world. And it can cause a lot of complications. So we think that meditation is a wonderful tool to help calm and slow down the mind stream in order that the soldier can have peace and relax and enjoy life that he had before he entered into this military service.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Captain Thomas Dyer, the first Buddhist chaplain in the Army. We're recording this program on September 18, 09. We're not exactly sure when it'll be aired, but as a result of that, we're not accepting phone calls today on WILL. Usually on Keeping the Faith, we, of course, invite listeners to join the conversation. Today, just sit back and listen, meditate, if you will, and as we talk with Thomas Dyer. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Support for Keeping the Faith is provided by the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. The Y has several regular programs that listeners may want to learn about. You can learn about, for example, the Friday Forum Lecture Series, Friday noons at the Y on the corner of Chalmers and Wright Street in Champaign. The Friday Forum programs you can find listed at online at universityymca.org. Also on Tuesday noons, Know Your University programs are scheduled, and also online you can find out what those programs are coming up on Tuesday noons. Again, the website is universityymca.org, and then look for Friday Forum or Know Your University or the many other programs available to people in the community at the University Y. Let's get back to our conversation about Buddhism and the armed services. Do you go by Thomas or Tom or Captain Dyer? What do the people in the Army call you?
Well, actually, the chaplains did not go by rank. They go by chaplain as a way to religiously connect with our soldiers, and to kind of distract the soldier from the rank system. And so a rank is a way, of course, it's a very classic and wonderful way to motivate soldiers to aspire to do better, to accomplish things, and to kind of move up in the Army system to the NCOs and senior NCOs and things like that. But it can also stimulate competition and things like that. So when a chaplain is interacting with a soldier, we want to kind of lay that aside, where there is no energy of competition, and that it's just you and your chaplain. You're talking about some of the struggles that all have in our lives, but being in a deployment can kind of escalate those struggles. So that's why we go by chaplain.
What appealed to you about the chaplain corps? Why did you decide to apply?
Well, I have liked the military service. I've really enjoyed the National Guard. specifically. I enjoy the fact that the military has great potential to do relief work, kind of disaster relief and famine relief and all that. Of course, knowing that that's not the primary mission of the military. The primary mission of the military is to protect the people of the United States and to protect the freedoms that we've worked very hard for these many years to establish and to protect the Constitution. But the military can have a function to do this other type of relief work and has done that. The Army has a doctrine now that's called nation building, where when we go into another country, we do water purification and help stimulate the economy and agriculture and things like that. So those activities are, in fact, there, and I think is worthy of being noted.
Now, you're a former Marine?
That's correct, yes, sir.
And where did you serve?
Well, I was in the Marine Reserve, so I'm very proud to say that I went to Parris Island in South Carolina and went through Marine Corps boot camp.
And survived it.
I did, and needless to say, that was a wonderful challenge and impacted me very deeply. And as they say, once a Marine, always a Marine. And I can say that is, in fact, true. If I find myself in difficult situations, I can remember the type of motivation and the type of strength of mind that the Marine Corps kind of instilled in me, and I can still benefit from it to this day. So I'm very proud of that and very thankful that I had that experience in my life.
So how long were you in the Marine Reserves?
I was in the Marine Reserve 8 years.
8 years. And then what happened in your life?
Well, I had an interesting event that took place that happened while I was in the Marines. It did not happen because I was in the Marines. It was a result of my own mind. So I noticed that while I was in the Marine Corps and training, I began to see a quality of a mind arising in me. And it was this quality that was almost wanting to get into a, say, combat situation and wanting to have the opportunity to use the weapon and even kill someone. So at this early age, and I was young in my 20s, I realized that that's not the path. This is not a good quality of mind to have. And it could be very dangerous for me spiritually. So I decided to leave the Marine Corps and to pursue a spiritual vocation.
Now, had you seen combat at that point or not?
Well, I did not really seek it. It was more of kind of a fantasy that was arising in my mind.
So you weren't deployed to a theater of war?
I was not. Uh-huh. Actually, in 1990, I was in the process of being deployed to Desert Storm. I was training at Camp Pendleton, and the ground war, they launched the ground war, and of course the results are a matter of history. So they sent us back home. And I think that was what someone might say providential, and we as Buddhists would say auspicious, because at that particular time, I was not really ready to be useful in the military. So I realized that I did not want this quality of mind. I did not want this kind of, almost kind of bloodlust to arise in me. And it was very in very much seed form. But I recognized it. And I made a conscious decision in my early 20s to say, no, that's not how I want my life to become. That's not how I want my mind to become and engage in activity like this. And I cannot overemphasize this, that it did happen while I was in Marine Corps training, but it was not the Marines. This was me. If I was in the Army, if I was in the Coast Guard, or whatever service I was in, it would have occurred anyway, because this was something that Thomas was experiencing.
We're talking with Thomas Dyer, who's a chaplain in the Army, representing the Buddhist tradition of faith. Chaplain Dyer, when you discovered that you wanted to go on this spiritual path and left the Marines, what did you do practically to follow that path?
Well, I looked around, and of course I had this Christian worldview that was just kind of the groundwork in my consciousness or in my mind, and it was very good. The Christian faith is kind of a root religion for me, and it was very good. So at this age, I think I was of the age of 19 when I actually made this decision. I think earlier I said somewhere early 20s, but I think it was more of the age 19 that I saw the kind of killer mind and this mind that wanted to do harm, because doing harm was some type of kind of a addiction or adrenaline or something like that. And looking at that seed form, I said, absolutely not. This is not going to be a part of my life. So when I come out of the Marine Corps, what was available to me in the southern portion of the United States, of course, was the Baptist faith. So I kind of, proverbially we might say, I just jumped in.
Now, to be a Southern Baptist pastor, is that the direction you chose at that point?
Well, when I first came to the Christian faith, I really came for spiritual nutriment. I came to find kind of the answer to many of the problems that I saw in my own mind and in life in general. There was a sense of just general dissatisfaction with life. Not that there was anything dramatic in my life that would warrant, something like depression or something like that. It wasn't like that. It was more of just, there's got to be more in this life. There's got to be something very rich and very deep that can touch your mind and heart, that can provide just profound peace. And I wanted this. So I came to the Christian faith to have that nurtured in me. And I can say it did. It was wonderful. The Christian faith is very wonderful, and it supported me fantastically. So, from my perspective as a Buddhist now, it's not that there was some type of separation or rejection or turning away from my point of view. You see.
Did you go to a Southern Baptist seminary?
I did. I started going to a Southern Baptist church, and I kind of went down the normal path that someone who's very interested in spirituality goes through, where you start out just as a church member, and then you kind of go into youth ministry and Bible college and then seminary, and then I went to pastor two wonderful churches that have wonderful people and that I have very good and fond memories of. So all of this experiences were very, very beneficial in my life.
Now, by this point, were you married?
I was married in 92, yeah. So I was married during the seminary years and the years of pastoring the church.
Do you have children?
I do. I have a 13-year-old rascal boy who's wonderful, and I have a 10-year-old girl who is equally wonderful.
How did your family respond to your choosing to go to Bible college, Baptist seminary? Were they comfortable with that?
They were. They were very supportive. My side of the family, that is, you know, my father and mother, they are spiritual people, but their spirituality is more private and that type of thing. But on my wife's side, they are very evangelical. They are very committed Christians, and the whole family is very interested and active in the church. So for me to have what we would call, or the Christian kind of way of thinking of things, like this call to ministry, they supported that, and they thought this was a wonderful and valuable thing to do. So there was a lot of support from family to kind of go into Christian ministry.
And was there less support when you made a change to Buddhism?
Yeah, you know, you can imagine with kind of great compassion how my family must have felt. Not really understanding what was transpiring in my life, because the meditations that I was doing very privately. And I was doing this and was very content to just practice meditation in the quietness of my own mind or my own heart. So the journey from the Christian faith to Buddhism happened very quietly. And so when Buddhism really began to flower in me and to take a very strong root, it did. It was very hard for my family at first to understand. And of course, we must understand that was difficult for them. And, you know, with great compassion.
Did the marriage survive?
Oh, yeah. We had some rocky roads, you know. It was, you know, with the evangelical kind of belief system, it was a little confusion at first. It was a fear that perhaps I had endangered my eternity, and how were the children going to react to this decision, and you know, what kind of position would I take with the family? So there we had to work that out, and we had to come to some agreements. And of course, I began to tell my wife that Buddhism is a very personal path. Buddhism is not evangelistic. It is not... it does not take an absolute position that says you must come to Buddhism or you're going to something like a hell or something like that, or you must believe reality or God or the ultimate reality is like this or you're very much in danger. So Buddhism does not have to do that. So I had to communicate that to her. But beyond that, I had to prove to her that that was how I was going to interact with the family. So I support her Christian faith, and I support the children's Christian faith. And beyond support, I help raise these children in their root faith of Christianity. So I want them to cling very tightly to Christ. And there's no contradiction in my faith practice to say that. And so I practice very respectfully Buddhism, and when I'm in my home life, Buddhism is very private, and I make sure the Christian faith is precious and sacred in the family.
Some might wonder, and this is a rude question, but some might wonder if you're escaping the family Christian situation by going into the army as a Buddhist chaplain.
Oh, I don't think so. I think that's a fair question, but that's not really the case with us because we do have a deep love for each other, and we are experiencing the same things that other soldiers are experiencing when they go on deployment. Whether it's you're dealing with sadness about being apart for so long, and I have a 10-year-old daughter that's really nervous about it, like
sure.
Many 10-year-old daughters all across the country. So we're going through the same thing that our soldiers are, and soldiers' families are, and we're kind of arousing strength to do this very important activity and mission, and we're at the same time we're looking forward to coming back together and being a family. So I don't think that's the correct way to look at it, but I do understand if someone might kind of consider that thought.
Do you know how long you'll be gone? You say you're not sure whether you'll be sent most likely to Iraq or Afghanistan, but with the shortage of chaplains, is your deployment likely to be stretched out, or do you know precisely how long it will be?
Yeah, there is a possibility in the chaplain corps that you could spend more time on duty than, say, an enlisted soldier. But we can say that the deployment will be a minimum of 12 months, likely 15 months, and possibly even more. And so with that, my wife has to have a strong faith in her expression of faith, and I have to have a strong meditation and connection to my faith, and we will do this. We will do this, what we have to do, because we both believe, even though she's a Christian and I'm a Buddhist, we both believe it's very important to go and help relieve suffering of soldiers. So we kind of come to this differently. Her referent is, of course, the person of Christ. And my referent is to help relieve suffering for all peoples. But we come to the same conclusion that this is a very, very important task to be done. So she supports me in that way, and I think that's very beautiful.
Here on WILL AM 580, we're talking on Keeping the Faith today with Chaplain Thomas Dyer, who has gone from being a Marine Reserve to a Southern Baptist pastor to a Buddhist chaplain. He will be deployed very soon. He's not sure exactly where yet, but most likely Afghanistan or Iraq. We're recording this interview on September 18, 09. We're not sure when it will air, but that's why we're not accepting phone calls today, as usual, on Keeping the Faith. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these programs. Let's talk a little bit, Chaplain Dyer, about the strengths of Buddhism for soldiers and for you. We've talked about what Buddhism is not. It's not absolute. It's not evangelical. It doesn't evangelize or try to convert folks. But what are the strengths of Buddhism as you face, since you will be going into a most likely a combat situation with combat soldiers, your own life is in danger. What are the strengths of Buddhism that help you face that?
This is a very good question. What Buddhism has to offer all soldiers and even all people, regardless of faith distinction, is Buddhism teaches you to look at your own mind. It presents disciplines and practices to look at what's really going on in mind activity. So all of us, this is a universal human experience. We can see that as we're walking in daily life or doing daily activity, our mind is rushing from past to future. And usually it moves into a regret of the past and some type of hope for the future, where you're hoping that your life will be different. And this energy of going past the future will create a grasping or an attachment, and it begins to cause a lot of suffering. And then we can notice in our minds that thoughts will just begin to arise, and uninvited thoughts will just arise in our mind. And then if we're really quiet, and we get into quiet moments, we can almost hear like this chattering going on in our mind, this kind of self-talking going on. And along with that, if we're very mindful, we can see certain energies that are rising up. It seems to be coming from somewhere in our bodies and coming into our minds. So all of this mind activity can cause a lot of confusion, suffering, and even depression. And this is, it's very clear that this is a universal experience. So what meditation does, it helps a soldier or another person just sit very calmly, close your eyes, and look at all the activity that's going on in your mind. Look at the energy. Look at the craving. Look at the type of patterns of thinking that's going on in your mind. And then, as you're watching all of this mind system and this mind activity, you can begin to calm it. You can begin to almost kind of disattach from negative emotions and things like this. So you can imagine the soldier who has come from the United States to overseas, and he has the same issues and problems in his life that all of us do. But now he is in a Humvee driving down a desert road, and an explosion goes off. And it's this incredible noise, this incredible turbulence that takes place, this wreckage and twisting of metal. And then you see that there may have been loss of life there. And you see all of that. And you smell that. And you feel that. And then you come back into your life, and you have taken all of that into your mind. So now you have new energies that are arising in your mind. You have all these new thoughts and new mind chatter that's going on. And your mind has sped up very quickly. It's very difficult to deal with it. So the soldier then will finish a deployment, and he will come home, and he will be in his living room, maybe with his lovely wife and a beautiful child. And all of that is still flowing rapidly through his mind. And it's very difficult for him to reconnect. So what we think is Buddhism has a tool. So I'm not offering Buddhism to a soldier. I'm offering just a tool to a soldier. And that is, with this tool, he can meditate and begin to slow this mind stream down. He can begin to calm these thoughts. And he can begin to slowly dissolve that experience and that explosion and everything he saw, felt, and even smelled. And he can bring his mind back to peace, not necessarily with Buddhism, but with just a tool that Buddhism has to offer, you see.
You've talked about your experience with Buddhism as being very personal, very individualistic, a practice that you found helpful even while you were still a Southern Baptist minister. But have you ever been yourself with a community of other Buddhists? Is that an important part of Buddhism?
Yeah. I couldn't hear the question.
I'm sorry.
Yes,
we're talking with Chaplain Thomas Dyer by phone in Memphis, Tennessee, and I appreciate his spending an hour with us with a phone receiver to his ear. The question I was asking was, Buddhism has been very individualistic for you. You talked about private, personal practice. Have you ever been in a Buddhist community, and is that important for Buddhism?
Oh, yes. Without a doubt. To be in a community of practitioners is very important for someone who wants to practice Buddhism, very, very deeply and comprehensively. It is very good to be with a teacher. It's very good to be with other meditators because you can generate a lot of energy that is very nurturing, very powerful, and very wonderful. So, yes, I do that type of thing in my own practice. That's what a Christian would call a church or a Islamic person might call a mosque, and a Jewish person might call a synagogue. We call it a sangha. And we have a sangha that will kind of nurture us and give us strength.
Chaplain Dyer, are there very many of these Buddhist communities the people could be a part of scattered around the United States?
Yes, there is. We might could say it like this. Our eyes have kind of habitual patterns of seeing things. And these habituations occur all the time, and we see kind of the same things all the time. But when we become aware of something else, then we begin to see this everywhere. And what I mean by this is in the West, we're not used to seeing Buddhist communities and Buddhist worship centers and things like that. But when our eyes kind of become aware that they're there, then we begin to see them all over the place. And so there are a lot of opportunities to be with one of these communities if one chooses to be. And I think this is important for chaplains and chaplain corps as well. This is what we were just talking about of the habituations of the eyes. So we are used to seeing soldiers who are of the Christian faith and either evangelical or Catholic. And we're not so much used to seeing a Buddhist soldier or a soldier who has more of a contemplative or mystical faith. But then when we become aware and our eyes learn to look and see this type of phenomenon, then we begin to see, there's Buddhist soldiers. There's a lot more than we thought there were here. There are a lot of kind of mystical practitioners out here. So I think that's an important way to think about this and to train our minds and our eyes to see more broadly, more vastly. And I think there will be more understanding on everyone's part concerning what's transpiring in the military now.
Buddhism, of course, is an ancient faith with a long history, but has it adapted to new technology so that, for example, someone who wants to learn more about Buddhism can go to a website, who wants to find one of these Buddhist communities to become a part of? Is there an easy way to do that?
Yeah, it's really the most Buddhist communities have kind of tapped into technology and have become very savvy with it and very skilled with it. So the, you know, of course, the younger soldiers there, they all know how to use the computer as well. So they can just can do that very clearly and will not have a problem connecting.
For listeners who might have missed part of this program, of course, you may listen at your own leisure online by going to will.illinois.edu. Click on AM. You'll have several choices there of TV, FM, or AM. Click on AM and then look for Keeping the Faith. And or you can put in a search word such as Chaplain Dyer, D-Y-E-R. If you'd like to, if you missed part of this program and would like to hear it via computer. And, of course, other programs from Keeping the Faith are archived there and available for you to listen to when you like. Chaplain Dyer, one last word. As you head off for deployment, what will you take with you? Does Buddhism have particular scriptures?
Yes, we do. We have what is called sutras, and we have certain practices that we will take, you know, take with us. And I will, of course, have a meditation cushion to meditate on it. I'll have a veil, of course, that we use to help facilitate calming and clearing the mind. I have a set of readings that I will take with me that is both for my own personal practice and for other of those who are Buddhist.
Well, please know that our thoughts, and I'm sure many of our listeners will be thinking of you and the soldiers that you're serving as you're deployed here in the next few months to either Iraq or Afghanistan. We've been talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Chaplain Thomas Dyer, D-Y-E-R, who is the first Buddhist chaplain for the Army and one of only a couple Buddhist chaplains in the armed services, serving 3,300 Buddhist soldiers and, of course, other soldiers, because chaplains are not limited to providing their services just to their own people following their own faith tradition. I want to thank Captain Dyer for giving us this time right before he's deployed and telling us about Buddhism and its practices. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Of all the days in the life of Nelson Mandela, one day may have been the most nerve-wracking, the day of the Rugby World Cup in 1995. More than a sporting event, it was a chance to help build a united South Africa. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, the fairy tale story of the game that made a nation. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening at 7.
And then what do they say?
Book mentors come into the classroom and they sit with the children and they do a lot of one-on-one reading, which the children really do look forward to. We appreciate the Book Mentor Project because it does focus so much on early literacy for children.
He's very excited about the books that WILL sent home. As soon as he comes home, he says, "I got a book," and he takes it out of his book bag and we probably read it, I'd say, a good 10, 11 times before bedtime. He loves to read the books.
I think WILL's Book Mentor Project is a wonderful program. It allows our children and families and community and teachers to work together to ensure that children are ready for kindergarten.
His cheeks were blushing red.
I'm Kelly Russell, and WILL is my source for extending classroom learning.
This is WILL AM 580 and 9-